Hey Siri, play Social Geek Radio.
Okay, Social Geek Radio podcast coming up.
Hello, geeks, and welcome to Social Geek Radio. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media conciliad. Today's guest is Lauren Fernandez, and today's episode is brought to you by MFV Expositions, Northeast Color, and Subtle Strauss. Subtle Strauss eliminates the franchisor marketing busy work of redundant customizations while protecting brand standards by giving franchisees self-service access to customize, print, download, and mail brand right collateral for all of their local markets from one central portal. They offer franchises scalable solutions for managing their marketing collateral, direct mail, promotional products, and signage needs. Growing brands like Goldfish Swim School, Christian Brothers Automotive, and Topper's Pizza have saved thousands of dollars and have been able to run their marketing programs with a small graphic design staff by leaning on Subtle Strauss as a strategic marketing partner. You can get a free demo or download some case studies at subtlestrauss.com/franchise. Today's guest is Lauren Fernandez. She's the principal of the Fernandez Company, and she's got a brand new venture launching this week called Full Course. Hey, Lauren, how are you?
Hey, good morning. It's nice to be on.
I have so many questions to ask you about what on earth is happening in the restaurant biz this year. Before we get there, can you give us a little bit of your background? What's your story?
Yeah, so I have been in product development and commercialization for nearly 20 years and started my career as an attorney and MBA here in Atlanta, Georgia, and helping clients take ideas through patentability, trademarking their brands, all the way through developing products that can sit on a shelf available for retail. And really just enjoyed working with clients to take their ideas and bring them to life. Eventually, I ended up taking a position as the associate general counsel for a division of Novartis Pharmaceuticals, where I worked with highly regulated products and medical devices in particular. And one day I got a call from the folks at Focus Brands, and they were interested in bringing me on to run the legal department, but also because I had that experience in international development of products. And so having worked in 140 countries and all over the US and done highly regulated products like contact lenses in that case, working with food was a dream, right? Because I am such a huge foodie and I love the restaurant industry. And so I made the leap over to Focus Brands. I was there for about 3 years. I worked on a lot of the licensing projects and product development that we did in the early days of that program. Helped a lot on the international side too with those deals for franchising. And, you know, of course, ran the legal department, including franchise administration. So that really started a long time fascination with me with that industry and the idea of putting franchisees first, something that we always heard from our CEO then at the time, Russ Umphenhauer. And, you know, we couldn't do anything without making sure that we were putting our franchisees first as a partner. And when I left the company, I really, that was something that I took with me. And I continued to work with both large and small restaurant groups and hospitality companies, helping them develop product lines out of existing brands where there was traditionally a lot of equity built up and recognition in the brand, but nothing quite in the retail sector that represented that brand experience outside of either the restaurant or the service or industry they were already in. In doing so, I really loved what I was doing, and I still do that now, but I did take a brief pause and I ran and operated some restaurants. So my partner and I started Origin Development Group, and we became the exclusive developers for the Atlanta territory, Augusta and Athens in Georgia, and very quickly became the fastest growing and largest franchisee for the Chicken Salad Chick system. It's a Southeastern regional deli chain here, and really enjoyed that time. I was the operating partner in our group. And so we purchased three restaurants initially. I had about a 3 month window to turn those around pretty quickly and get them in the black. And then within the next 2.5 years, we built another 8 restaurants. And that included three additional locations in what we have in downtown Atlanta as a non-traditional setup, but it was America's Mart, like a big kind of wholesaler of goods and to the retail industry. So you can only get in there with a pass, but it's a non-traditional setup in restaurant parlance. And we had about three more locations under development when we ended up selling the entire territory and the units back to Eagle Merchant, the owner at the time of the Chicken Salad Chick brand. And they, when they absorbed our restaurants at the end of December 18, I thought, wow, I'm exhausted. That was a ride. And I sat down and I took a beat. I took a year and I really thought about all the things that I had learned as an operator. And the one thing that I took away, and maybe this was all the years of me doing product development, you know, from idea or inception all the way to shelf. I thought there's got to be a better way to do this because we didn't really get a hang of it and opening restaurants and really crushing it until probably like unit six. And then I was like, wait a minute, we got to write this down. We got to get it right. Every single time we have to have a playbook. There's a right way to do this and let's document it. So one of the things I took from that whole experience was even with all of my years of experience, my connections in the industry, wonderful, you know, franchisor, wonderful field support. It was hard. It was really, really hard to grow. And I didn't think it should be that hard. So I sat down and I developed a process, really a methodology, if you will, as a consultant for helping independent restaurants go from zero, if it's just an idea, or one or two units and taking them all the way through 10, 20, even out to 100. And in doing so, we developed a new brand called Full Course. Full Course is that full service restaurant developer and investor to help you get from zero all the way to 100.
And that's launching right now as we speak here
it
on
is.
Tuesday, the 2nd of February. You are live and rolling out and launched, and you already have a couple of clients, it sounds like.
We
right?
do. We have a stacked pipeline. We're so excited. I think there's a definite need for this in the marketplace. And for all the reasons that we are able to help brands grow and thrive in a non-COVID environment, it's certainly necessary in this environment too, because our main principle is we leave the restaurant operator in place. Our goal is to come in and really optimize for profitability first, what is existing in the restaurant. So we do a full assessment. We come in, we tweak everything that we need to just to get it humming and whirring before we even start thinking about doing a copy, paste, repeat. Then we come in and develop a very intense revenue generation plan that has at least four different elements to it. We look at traditional development of restaurants in multiple different formats, including some new interesting things like ghost kitchens. Mm. We do non-traditional development into airports, military bases, universities, stadiums, and arenas. We do, of course, branded development, where we look at how can we take the essence that is this brand experience and put it out into consumer packaged goods or license it into other categories where it's not a direct competitor for the brand and generates revenue for the brand instead. And then of course, in the long-term growth plan, we also look at franchising as an option. So our strategy really is to develop a multi-layered revenue stream for these restaurant brands, and it creates stability for the brand no matter what happens in the environment, no matter what's going on in the world, if there's a pandemic or if there's an economic contraction, et cetera. It just helps the restaurant be more stable in its income over time and in the long run assist in the valuation of the brand if there's ever a partial or full liquidity event.
And it feels like if you've got all of those things in place, and I'm a branding guy, so I'm going to say especially the branding, mm-hmm. even when we have another crisis, which we will, at some point, there will be another pandemic. There will be another horrible thing that happens sometime next year or 3 years or sometime. It feels like if all of those things are in place, especially the branding, then you are actually pretty resistant to many of these things. And like a lot of brands we've seen actually grew last year because of some of their evolution into you know, different ways of serving customers and taking care of people, whether it's, you know, delivery or curbside or whatever. There's a lot of brands that did actually pretty well last year.
Right. And the brands that did well were able to pivot because there was a vision for the brand that was broader just than the four walls of the restaurant. Mm. And I think that that's like, if you take one thing away from today, is you need to start thinking about your restaurant brand as existing far outside the four walls of your dining room. It's because consumer behavior is shifting in the purchase decision as well. I mean, we're seeing obviously to-go and delivery have just as much weight as the sales that are happening in the dining room. And so if you think about it, that could mean up to 2/3 of your sales right now and into the future could be outside the four walls of your restaurant. So that branding message needs to be on everything from the bag that goes out the door, the way the bag is packed, the coupon that's inside the bag to bring them back for another order. Do they come back to you directly for that order? Are they using a third-party delivery service? How's your loyalty program working across all those platforms? It's really daunting for a lot of restaurateurs to sit down and think through that, but that's part of what we do. We really sit down and think about how can we take this brand to the next level and how can we do it across multiple platforms? Because that serves you and the brand awareness needs to be there before you even think about putting that restaurant in its second location or third location. We like there to be brand awareness far in advance of us actually building a brick and mortar because that leads to better sales when you do open.
Yeah, the most important real estate is in the head of the consumer. And imagine the number of people who have not set one foot inside a restaurant in person, indoors, in the past 11 months. But they're still loyal customers and they're ordering and they're getting takeout delivery or whatever you guys come up with next.
Right.
Living inside that consumer's head is really the most important place to be. We saw some figures last week from the National Restaurant Association that said 110,000 restaurants in this country have closed permanently in the past year, and 3/4 of them will not reopen another restaurant. Three quarters of the operators said that they will not open another restaurant. So obviously the pandemic shut a lot of doors. Why else are, what other reason are people closing and failing, or maybe even not closing, but not growing past a couple of units?
So let's address the issue of the closures first. And this is okay. Something that I think has been going on for a long time. And I want to say at least 3 years. And I'm going to use the Atlanta market as a relevant example, because I'm far more expert in that here. But one of the things that I saw regularly happening was as there was a lot of development, right? And new developments are super sexy, right? You get to build it out exactly how you want, and you get your fresh space and everything's hunky-dory, but those rents are extremely high. And yeah. One of the things that we regularly see is this notion, like, I have to be here. And the idea that, you know, it's the place that the restaurateur is like, this is it. This is the only place that works for me. And the rent is in excess of $45 a square foot. And really, the salient measure there is a percent of sales. That's how I want to think about it. And so for me, for the metrics for my clients, I'm saying to them, look, if your occupancy cost, including all of your utilities and the rent to the landlord, is north of 9%, we got a problem, because you're not going to be able to float that in a year where you do badly on sales, in a pandemic year, for example. Yeah. So I don't want to put it all on commercial real estate, but rather the decisions that are made with respect to the brand's sales and the product mix and how that factors into the ultimate profit margin that's coming out of the restaurant. But I've seen that mistake happen way too many times. Like, yeah, can you float it in a year when you're doing $2 million? Absolutely. But what happens when you do $800,000 a year in sales, right? I mean, it gets a little problematic. So I think that might be one of the major contributors, is we're not seeing folks working on super tight controlled margins where they're thinking, I can't afford that. I can't afford that in a down economy, but I can do it now. And then they're locked into these leases that are 5, 10 years long, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I see that as being part of the equation, especially when we move to this hyper delivery market where everything was going out the door. Suddenly that square footage wasn't even serving its purpose. And so what is a super tiny kitchen maximized for the largest dining room possible, for example, really shot you in the foot because you needed a bigger kitchen to bang out all the delivery that was going right. out the door,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I even had one client who was in that exact situation and ended up taking out commissary kitchen space because there was no way to meet the demand of the delivery with the tiny dining room kitchen that they had. So,
and the space that people seem to just, they can't get past the idea of location, location, location. Well,
right.
in the ghost kitchen environment and delivery and everything else, how important is that location anymore? Especially, you know, another trend that I see happening for people who rely on a good, you know, business person's lunch, those people might not be going back to those office
right.
parks anymore, right? So
right.
that location, boy, it sure doesn't matter as much as it did a couple of years ago. So you're paying a lot of money for a location that could be in a whole different neighborhood and no one would know.
Right. I think we're going to end up with some urban food deserts as a result, unless
yeah,
the landlords
yeah.
can come up with a strategy that allows everyone to win, because you're right. That's another kind of issue that's on the horizon yet. We haven't quite figured out what's going to happen with all that expensive commercial real estate that's in those Class A buildings, or in, you know, really highly densely, you know, daytime populated areas
yeah.
where there's a lot of workers. So I hear you on that. I still want to say that location is important though. I just think what matters is being hyper dialed in and aware of where your consumer is. Yes, during pandemic, they're at home, but where are they really during the day? And so I think a common mistake we see emerging brands make too is they don't, you know, let's say they're a lunch concept. They really need to do the research and make sure they're going to an area of town where there are people who are eating lunch, whether it's corporate employees or, as we affectionately call them, ladies or men who lunch, right? Who
right.
are partially retired or who have the freedom of the middle of the day to be out doing lunch, right? And or near a school or a college or et cetera. You know, you really need to think through those decisions, because once you're there. And it's very, as you know, very difficult to correct a bad real estate decision.
Back in a moment after this word about Franchise Expo Nashville. The Big Franchise Show is coming back to Nashville May 6th and 7th at Music City Center. I'll be there along with my Social Joey crew, chatting with franchisors and industry pros. Thousands of entrepreneurs and future business owners from across the United States will attend Franchise Expo Nashville looking for franchise opportunities. Nashville is ranked within the top 10 large metros for job growth and population growth for the past 6 years. And it's the nation's fourth best city for starting a business. There's still room for franchisors to exhibit and meet the most qualified prospects from Nashville and the surrounding areas. More than half of the nation's population resides within 650 miles of Nashville. Check it out now at franchiseexponashville.com.
As to the closures and kind of what is going to happen to the industry afterwards, you know, we've seen a lot of folks who did not have a handle on their profit margin or were not quick enough to pivot, suffer and have to close their doors. And it's been incredibly sad as a result. You know, a lot of the consulting work we did last year was free or at very little cost just to help people survive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're really proud of the work we were able to do. I do think that it's not a doomsday proposition for the restaurant industry, because what I'm seeing is a lot of people leaving their jobs or transitioning their job that was in corporate America to a part-time job, or going out and living their dream of opening a restaurant. And we have several clients right now who have recently, during the pandemic, opened restaurants and are thriving. And so it's not the end of the industry. I don't think we're going to see a catastrophic loss. I think there will be a net loss. Don't get me wrong, but I do think that there are some new and emerging brands, and there are the brands out there that are continuing to grow who figured this out.
Yeah. And we say this on this podcast all the time. Anyone during the year 2020, and even now in early 2021, anyone who started a new business during this entire, you know, catastrophe, I guarantee 2-3 years from now, they're going to be some of the A players in the industry, because for, you know, to step up and have a vision and have a plan together and, you know, get the financing and anything else they needed and actually go out and do it, while the other 90% of the people were, you know, pulling back and wondering if they were going to survive, those people are going to succeed, or I should say a vast majority of them, I think.
I completely agree. I think we are going to see a huge resurgence in the fast casual segment, because that segment has always been, I'm going to use this term a little loosely here, recession proof, right? People have to eat. And yes, QSR similarly, but fast casual kind of can serve both up and down in the socioeconomic demographics that it serves. And I think as a category, there's going to be a lot of emerging brands there who have that nimble and flexible structure. I think you're going to see a lot of really smart franchisors setting up multiple formats for their franchisees and giving them the flexibility to do more offsite catering work or other types of outside the four walls, right? Reaching consumers through outside those four walls or satellite locations attached to their restaurant. And I think that's going to be an emerging trend that's going to help fast casual really take off in the next few years post-pandemic.
Excellent. Let's talk a bit about restaurant growth and why some do not get past one location or maybe two units. Is there some barrier for some owners that they just don't get some particular part of this right, that they just can't seem to grow to that magic number of, you know, maybe it's six or something like that, where this is really rocking and rolling? Do you see anything that just really stops people in their tracks at one or two units?
Yeah, absolutely. So these are the most common things that we see. At its heart, restaurants are really about people, right? And food is wonderful. And we love to talk about menus and branding and all these things. But I genuinely believe that the restaurant is, it's called restaurants and hospitality, because we're serving other people all day
long.
And at its core, it's about people. And I think the number one mistake a lot of early restaurateurs make is they don't invest in their teams. And it's really hard when you're the owner and you can probably do everything. You know, you're like an octopus. You have a hand on everything. You're multitasking all the time and you wear so many hats. You have like a 15 hat rack, right? Like you've got, you know, so many different hats you wear. And I've been there and I understand. And when you're good at it and you can make it happen with one restaurant, it's hard to take a beat and train someone else and divest that task and trust somebody else and train them properly and give them the authority and the responsibility and trust them that they're going to be okay if they fail, that they can figure it out and you're going to be there to help them. And so that's a tough one, right? And so we really work with our owners to lay out their job responsibilities, get really clear on where their time is best spent, who the talent is on their team, who they need to be looking for and bringing in to add talent to their team. And then we're their backstop. So our team that we've developed is my dream team, right? That I've wanted to kind of assemble for years of industry experts that I've worked with across many different categories. And we're there, right? So we have a people person who helps coach them through, how do you interview a candidate? How do you coach and set a development plan for your employees? How do you train them, right? And so we spend a lot of time on that in the early stages, because we got to get these owners thinking, okay, if I hand off inventory to someone, not only can we get it done every week consistently, but that frees up 3 hours of my time on a Monday that I can be working on helping craft the social media messaging, because let's say they don't want to give that up, right? So that's kind of, I would say number one is figuring out how to scale the people piece, because you can't be everywhere. You have to have a team behind you. You need to get to a place where you don't think the restaurant's burning down all the time and trust your team to execute, right?
Right.
I think the second mistake is you have to institutionalize and systematize a lot of things in a restaurant to make it scalable for growth. So it sounds really easy, but it's a lot of work, right? It's like every single recipe has to have weight portion controls, has to have a finite way that you make it, has to be costed all the way through so we know what the food cost associated with that is, has to be priced correctly. Every single procedure in the kitchen, from cleaning to inventory to reordering, has to be documented in a procedure. And that is all the stuff that eventually someday, when you trust a franchisee to go run a unit, that's your operations manual. That's the genesis of your operations manual, right? So we're starting early, kind of shaping and making them think through, oh, that's a new process. I got to make an SOP for that. And we start early and we build and we build and we build over time. But what that also allows us to do is, and this is the third point, is we formalize the training system. So, you know, it's not just about getting the right players in the restaurant and having those procedures documented in the recipes, et cetera. You have to have a formal training system in place so that when you are hiring new employees or hiring a new manager for that second, third, fourth location, there's a process that's in place. Everyone goes through the same training and the owner has confidence that they're learning what they need to know to be able to operate in his or her shoes. And I think that those are the first three things that we usually do when we go in to get a restaurant ready for scaling. I cannot underscore this fourth thing quite enough though, and it runs through everything that we do, is really good restaurant accounting. You got to have a handle on what your food costs are, your labor costs, your occupancy costs, all of these things, the controllables. If you don't have a handle on those on a daily and weekly basis, you're going to constantly be playing whack-a-mole on things that are popping up to erode your profit margin. And we teach and coach our restaurant owners and our managers on how to read those numbers in a P&L so they know, and they're looking at them weekly, daily, even if they need to. And I think that's really critical for growth as well.
Excellent, because you could have all the customers in the world, but if there's some cost that are out of hand, you're still going to go broke even with a full restaurant.
Yeah, we like the idea of acknowledging that really great operators have instincts, right? You've got mm-hmm. that gut instinct. You've got the people skills. These folks are successful even without us. And we really give that the homage that it's due. But I always say trust, but verify. And the verify piece is the numbers that we get in some seriously ninja level accounting, because I genuinely believe that your instinct could be like, something's not right with the food cost, but then you look at the numbers and immediately can see that you had to waste three cases of chicken or steak because it was bad. Well, the next step then needs to be figuring out where in the supply chain it went bad and trying to get reimbursed for that, right? So it really, it's one of those things where I think a lot of restaurateurs have those instincts and then spend a lot of time trying to chase down the answer when the answer could be right there in the data for them.
Excellent. Before we go, any other trends or maybe product development or anything else that you guys are seeing right now for the rest of 2021 that you might want to point out to everyone?
Yeah. So we're seeing huge trends in meal kits and like right in like super local, farm fresh, high quality meal kits that are competing with those that are delivered nationwide. And those meal kits have in them packaged portions, not just of the proteins and the vegetables for at-home making at home, but also, you know, these restaurateurs are starting to think about, oh, the sauce goes really well on this protein. And so we're seeing the early stages of evolution towards consumer packaged goods, right? Where these mm-hmm. restaurateurs have been sending home their secret sauce and maybe it's not properly labeled or branded for retail, and that's okay because we're getting through a pandemic right now. But I do think that there's going to be a real renaissance of these brands getting leveraged onto consumer packaged goods. I don't say that selfishly, just because I love product development. It's something I'm very passionate about, but I really genuinely believe it's a fantastic way for restaurants to add brand awareness outside the four walls and engage with consumers at home. And that loyal customer may not be eating the protein from your restaurant every single day of the week, but I bet you they're taking that sauce that they love from your restaurant and they're opening the fridge and pulling it out 4 days a week. That's four times they've seen your brand that they may not have even seen. And so you're creating a level of customer engagement and loyalty and driving behavior. And I think all of those things are just hugely synergistic for restaurants. Let's not even go to the fact that it can add anywhere from 5 to 10% straight to your bottom line with revenue.
Wow. And also, if there is another crisis, pandemic, lockdown, whatever's going to happen in the future, meal kits and any sort of consumer packaged good, it could be a savior again.
Yeah. So it's not just sitting there on a shelf, dusty with a bunch of old t-shirts, right? Like, it's merch. It's going to become the star of some of these brands. And I think that I think we're fortunate that people are opening their eyes to this conceptually, because I've been saying it for years, and franchisors and restaurant companies who get this or really get it and do it well, look at what really resonates with consumers and what about the brand is it that they want to have in their home, right? The minute you can have a brand in the home and be part of that consumer experience on a daily basis, you are winning. And those are the brands that have the longevity of 10, 20 years in the marketplace. Those are the brands that thrive with growth, whether it's franchise or not. Those are the brands that are really going to survive and thrive past this pandemic.
Very good. Thank you so much for being here today. We wish you all the best with the full course program. Please let us know how you're doing there. And if people want to learn about that or they have some other questions for you, where can we send them?
Absolutely. Hit us up at fullcourse.com. We're on social media at Full Course Official. That's both on Instagram and Facebook. And if you hit our website, you will see plenty of free information, quizzes you can take, assessments you can take as a restaurant owner to see where you are and how we can help you, really. And we offer all of our services, both as consulting full-time, where we can come in and help you, or you can go a la carte and purchase some courses and watch them on your own and see if you can't educate yourself and help figure out what your next best product is going to be.
Before we go, a quick word about Northeast Color. Northeast Color is offering franchise systems help with social distancing floor decals, signs, and window decals, suspended partitions for the front desk or workout stations, parking lot signage, hand sanitizer pedestals, and signage, all fully branded and customized for your franchisees. Learn more now at northeastcolor.com. And thanks for listening to Social Geek. We're here to help you get yourself ready for the comeback of a lifetime. This is the Social Geek Radio Network.